Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, a partner at PricewaterhouseCoopers, and today's conversation is with Major General James Jackson, Commanding General, U.S. Army Military District of Washington. And joining us in our conversation is another PwC partner, Brian Dixon. Well, General Jackson, one of the things that I've always been most impressed about MDW is Arlington National Cemetery. Could you describe the management challenges one faces in operating a cemetery, or operating the cemetery?
The biggest challenge with Arlington is space. We're fast running out of space. Where it sits, geographically, it's bounded by a variety of different things. And so we're concerned that at some point in time, we'll just run out of ground. We're building plans to be able to take us well into this century, beyond 2050 and a little bit further than that, to be able to do the things we have to do. But there's going to have to be some other innovative ways to deal with it. And that's why we're building things like columbariums for cremation and so forth. The other aspect is that we run anywhere from about 28 funerals a day, average about 24, but we can go as high as 28. And we inter both the Army and, of course, all the other services. Regardless of which service is participating, I could have elements of my own participating depending on the level of funeral, because depending on the individual veteran, there are certain honors that are rendered based upon what level that individual worked. And so we go through a fairly lengthy process to figure all that out so that we render proper honors for all of them. But as you might expect, Arlington has a lot of emotion tied to it, and we deal with that as best we can because we have families that are deserving of our attention at this point in time in their lives. As far as they're concerned, that's the most important thing that's happened to them at that part and that point in time in their lives, and we deal with that. Overall, things operate very smoothly. One thing I would pass on to all your listeners is that as a veteran, if you're out there, you need to make sure that your paperwork and stuff is available and properly set aside. So when the time comes, your family is properly prepared. And there is a degree of paperwork associated with everything we do. And if you don't have that available, you can make things a little bit more difficult. And there are ways to deal with that. All you got to do is pick up the phone and call, and people can be happy to provide that information either through the Veteran Services or, of course, you can call Arlington itself.
From personal experience as well as talking to people who've been involved at a ceremony in Arlington National Cemetery, the response is all very, very positive. And so my question to you is, how does it run so well? How does everything with 20 or 28 ceremonies, how does it all work so well?
Well, we've had lots of time to perfect that. In all honesty, we have had lots of time, and over time, the experience causes people to be able to find ways to make it better. Additionally, I would tell you that the young people and all the folks that we have working down there are focused keenly on that one event, and they take it very seriously. The soldiers who participate in Arlington will tell you to a man that they are very proud to be able to provide that service to veterans who served their country, and now they're paying their last respects. And so every time I've witnessed a funeral, I've never seen anything but a tremendous sense of dedication and desire on the part of everybody to render those honors properly. And it ranges all the way from the very top down to the lowest ranking individual, to include family members who receive some honors.
General, I know from my work with the Army that you personally and also the Military District of Washington has taken a leading role in developing innovative ways to managing your post infrastructure, including moving out into some innovative approaches in the area of privatization. Could you talk about what you're doing in this area?
Yeah, basically, it's a fairly simplistic approach, but it's complicated as you get into the details. The simplistic part is that the U.S. Army is good at many things, but some things we're not as good at as the private industry. And so the desire is to let's go get the experts to do the things that they're good at, and let us go back to doing the things we're good at. And so running installations and providing utilities to an installation is not something you learn about in the Army. And maybe we ought to go out and find those experts. And so that's what we're doing. We're trying to bring them in, all with the stated goal of being more efficient and effective with the dollars that the taxpayers give us. Another example would be the Residential Community Initiative, which is RCI in short, but it's just a fancy way of finding out how we can build new houses or improve the maintenance on the existing housing that we have on our installations. For example, the house I live in is 100 years old. Everything you do to that house is now historically based, and so it costs us money to be able to do that, and it costs more money than you might on a younger house. But how do we go about fixing all this old infrastructure that in some cases we can't tear down because of the preservation and the historical requirements? And so we took a look at that, and the Army decided the best way to do that is to partner with private firms who build houses. And we pay for them by using the housing allowance that we receive if you own a house and you're living off the installation. You forfeit that when you move into government quarters. Well, in this case, we won't forfeit it anymore. We will take that money and pay the private contractor who has built the house. And they're contracting to do this, or building this partnership for long term. The one up at Fort Meade is a company called Pisern Real Estate, and they're tied in for 50 years right now. So they see the novel approach here is, here's an American business that is not necessarily concerned with instantaneous gratification or profit. He is building his program to make money over 50 years, and he's partnering with the military to do that. And so we're going to get newer houses, better maintained houses, while he gets a long-term return on his investment, which is kind of novel.
You said it was a simple concept, yet it was hard to do. What's the hard to do part?
Well, the hard is because it's new. No one's done this before, and so you're kind of groping as you go, trying to figure out how to do it. As you break new ground, it just causes new things to occur and things that you haven't thought of necessarily. There were some hurdles. There's legal hurdles. There's some political concerns. And there's also just the issue of, how do we go about maintaining a relationship for 50 years with a private entity? When was the last time the military built a partnership, a literal partnership, with a commercial entity? And so that's the difficult part, is putting together the product or the process so that it produces the product you want and at the quality you want to give our people the kind of living standards that they deserve.
What are your special authorities as the commanding general of MDW?
First of all, one of the extra functions I have is to function as the general court martial convening authority for all the elements in and around the National Capital Region. What that basically means is, when there's an infraction or some kind of a legal problem, I'm the decision maker as to whether we take that to a court martial or we process it with another way. So I will deal with all the military who work in the Pentagon and throughout the area, from, again, as close as Fort Meade, Fort Belvoir, and all the other agencies who, while they may not work for me, they will still fall under my jurisdiction for this. Last time we counted, it's over 90 different organizations. The other interesting part that falls to me is, we have elements of Navy, Marine Corps, Air Force, and Coast Guard that also work in the Capital Region that have jobs similar to mine. And so what we do is, we constantly interface with them so that we all know what each other's doing, to try and facilitate the jobs. Because, again, in a crisis situation, we might very well need their assets to assist us, and so we work together. Additionally, in the area of joint ceremonies, either at the White House or in dealing with Department of Defense, my organization takes the lead, and all the others follow what we do, and they'll take instructions from us.
As the commanding general for the Military District of Washington, you have jurisdiction over both Army soldiers and a large number of civilians. What are the significant cultural differences between these two groups?
You know, that's an interesting question, because before I came here, I might have answered it a lot differently than I will today. I will tell you today that I find very little difference between good workers, either be they civilian or military. I mean, good workers, good employees do things well, regardless of what clothing they wear and what their background is. They just want to strive to do well, and they'll do well. Now, there's those that there aren't so good, and then there's lots of differences with those. But I have not so good that wear a uniform sometimes too, and so there's a commonality there that I don't really think transcends culture here. So I would offer that in my job, that the people I've worked with, both civilian and military, I found to be very capable, able, dedicated, and they desire to do a great job. And therefore, there's really no difference between either one of them. And I'm blessed. I've got good folks who work for me, and those problems don't seem to take up much of my time.
Well, that's a good stopping point. Rejoin us after the break as we continue our discussion with General Jackson of the Military District of Washington. This is the Business of Government Hour.